The views and opinions expressed by John and DJ do not reflect those of any intelligent or rational human being and are solely the property of the Brightside Chat.
This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Hey, welcome back to the Bright Side and issue number 83. This week we tackle Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. John has some takes, I have some takes. Believe it or not, we have differing opinions. And does John actually change my mind on one of them? That would be crazy. But we also go off on a DCEU v MCU tangent as well. Try to compare what happened to the DCEU. Why weren't they as successful? So if you're stuck at home and you're jonesing for some comic book store conversation, hey, let's head into the store. Hey, my hardworking scientist, how you doing?
Well, I'm cracking the code, man. How are you?
Have you cracked it yet?
Not yet. I'm still working on it. I'm hardworking.
You're not. Otherwise, it would have said scientist.
It didn't say I was complete. Right. It didn't say I was finished working and at home having a sandwich scientist. It said I was a hardworking sandwich scientist.
At home having a sandwich. Nice. Yeah. Oh, man. All right. It all comes back to the food.
Yep. I'm not like buttered toast scientist.
Oh, what was that? You brought that up a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
That was your line.
It was.
Buttered toast.
I don't remember exactly what it was.
But supposed to be useless.
Yeah.
It wasn't it like that's as useless as buttered toast.
Yeah.
It's like, did you hear that somewhere? Did you just make that
up? It just popped into my, you know, my head works and
I can't believe that hasn't caught on yet. Like,
I know, right? Hashtag buttered toast isn't, I haven't seen that on Twitter yet. So.
Right. The new vernacular. Like, oh, piece of buttered toast. we got to get that going.
I know.
Dr. Joe, get on
it. It won't be the first time I've called for some hashtag on Twitter that hasn't taken off yet. So,
hey, it's like a broken clock's right twice a day. Just waiting for the hands to come around
Waiting for our second time.
Yep. It'll come back around. All right, what do we have for covers from last week that are FOC for today, this podcast going out on Monday?
Yeah, so I think we talked about Lois Lane number 11.
Yes, that was the one that had Jones. The nice 70s feel.
Yes.
That was nice. That was cool.
Yeah.
And then we had the Deja Thoris number 5, Louisa Pressler, that had a completely different kind of feel.
Yeah, it wasn't a 70s feel at all.
We'll definitely be tweeting out those pictures. You judge them for yourselves, listeners.
Exactly.
The Deja Thoris number 5, it's a nice one.
It is a nice cover.
It's a very nice cover.
I can see why you liked it.
Because you told me to. You told me to like it. No. All right, you ready to get into this?
Sure.
Controversial film.
Is it?
From when was this? 2016? Yeah, 2016.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. I was going to mention something before we play the trailer, but let's just play the trailer, and then we'll just get into it. We'll have a little bit of fun here.
All right.
Actually, I think we'll have fun.
Well, I guess we'll find out.
Is it really surprising that the most powerful man in the world should be a figure of controversy?
We, as a population on this planet, have been looking for a savior.
We're talking about a being whose very existence
they are not telling us the truth.
Challenges our own sense of priority in the universe.
Human beings have a horrible track record of following people with great power.
Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Chaos.
Maybe he's just a guy trying to do the right thing.
We know better now, don't we?
You're out of control.
Devils don't come from hell beneath us.
They brought their war here.
No, they come from the sky.
The world has been so caught up with what he can do that no one has asked what he should do.
Go home, go home, go home, go home.
That's how it starts.
The fever. The rage. The feeling of powerlessness that turns good men cruel.
Tell me, do you bleed? You will.
That was actually one of my favorite trailers. I thought that was really good with all of the voices and the backgrounds and everything, and so much description, but really didn't give anything away from the movie.
Right.
You know, it basically said that, you know, it seemed to be leaning towards, like, the world didn't like Superman, and that kind of lent you in a direction, but I thought that was a really good trailer for what we ended up getting. What'd you think? What'd you think of the movie?
Well, let me say this first, because this is I haven't watched this in a while either, and this was the first time I've actually watched the extended edition.
Oh, you watched that too, huh?
Yeah, I hadn't seen it before. But I wanted to say that all the things that people said about the extended edition were not true. Because everybody said, well, if you watch the extended edition, it makes everything make so much more sense. It didn't change my understanding. Well, not that I didn't understand it to begin with, but to me, right, it didn't change my perception of the movie one way or the other. I mean, it did, you know, it gave us an expanded opening scene.
Yep.
There was a couple of times, I didn't notice a whole bunch of other stuff, really, except for, like I said, that the opening scene, and then there was something in the middle I noticed that was different, but I don't think it added really that much depth or more to the movie.
So we have the scene at the end with what's his name and the mother boxes. Is that a new scene?
Why can't I think of a Steppenwolf?
Yes, there's a scene with him. And
yeah, that wasn't
the...
in. I don't think that was in the original cut.
Right. It's a very quick scene.
It seemed like the nightmare sequence was extended some in this version, as opposed to the original version. And like I said, there was definitely an expanded kind of Batman origin at the beginning of this, more so than what we got in the theatrical cut. And I'm not saying, it didn't take away anything from the movie at all, but I just don't think it added another layer of
It's a half hour longer, but yeah. I don't know what the difference is anymore, because all I've watched is the extended cut. I hadn't seen it.
In a while either, so not a lot stood out to me either, like except for those couple of scenes, like I said, that we just talked about. I'm just saying it didn't change my feeling on the movie one way or the other. I just don't think it made any difference. Anytime I can get more movie, I'm always okay with that.
Yeah.
I don't think, I guess, because the critics out there said, oh, well, cutting that stuff out of the movie is what ruined the movie for me, or this or that. You know, it should have always been that.
Right.
And I just don't think it was that. Like, I was looking for these deep scenes to show up that were going to explain all this stuff for me, and I didn't see any of that.
Right.
You know, it was just filler, really, more than anything.
There's a little bit that's a little bit more than filler, but you're right. It's still the same movie, either cut. I enjoy the extended edition because, like you said, I like the three-hour, you know,
I mean,
more
going
movie.
Forward, yeah, that's all I will watch. Like, I'll always watch it. That it's like the Lord of the Rings movies, too. Like, once you own the extended cuts, you're never going to go back and watch the theatrical cuts because there's no reason to. You're just getting more movie, you know?
Right.
And for the same price. You
and
know?
If I'm sitting down to have a good time, I'm like, I'm already invested for 2.5 hours.
Right. What's another 30 minutes? You
right.
Know?
Right.
So
I'm not trying to.
Yeah. Again, I mean, unless I catch it on HBO or something and it's not the, you know, it's just a theatrical cut, that's one thing. But I mean, if I'm ever going to sit down to pop the disc in and watch it again,
right.
That's what I'm always going to watch going forward is going to be that theatrical cut. None of that answered your original question, which was, do I like the movie or not? Well, I just thought it was kind of important to bring up the fact that I hadn't seen it before. I don't love it and I don't hate it. Like, it's not my favorite movie at all by any means. I definitely have problems with parts of this movie,
oh,
but
good.
I don't hate it. Like, I'm not one of those like detractors that just think it was like the worst piece of garbage ever made. I don't feel that way. But there's definitely things that I can't wrap my head around that I just don't make a lot of sense.
Good. And we'll get into that.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. It's not like I'm like, this is my favorite movie ever. I love Man of Steel. There's so much to me personally. There's so much depth in that movie, but a lot of that in Man of Steel is stuff that I project into it on my own.
Right.
This one, I just think this movie's fun. Love the Batman versus Superman. I can't wait to get into some of these scenes, but I loved leading up to it. Like that trailer. I don't know if I remember watching that trailer before the movie came out, but the anticipation of this movie coming out was huge. This was going to be bigger than any of the Marvel movies. And in my opinion, I think that's what led to its downfall, is that everybody went in with these expectations of how great it's going to be and this and that. And then everybody just was let down because I think their expectations were so high, you couldn't help but be let down.
Right.
You know, because when you hear what some of the people are saying, that especially at the time when this movie came out, and the critics or the fans that didn't like it, and they're like, oh, they screwed this up, or oh, they did this and that, and it's like, it should have been like this. It's like, huh? Like, should have been like what? They made a movie.
Right.
It's like,
right.
And I just think it's just a fun movie.
It is a lot of fun, but, you know, you and I have had this debate off and on before. Like, do the movie versions of these characters have to stick to the comic book versions of these characters 100%? And, you know, there's a school of thinking that says that they don't have to. You know, like, Batman can behave one way in a movie that's different than how we know him from the comics or whatever.
Right.
I'm more of a purist and would prefer that they stuck more to the traditional versions of the characters. I know you don't necessarily ascribe to that 100%, but to me, like, when I watch this movie, Superman is Superman. Like, I have no problems with the way he acts or carries himself at all throughout this movie. It's Batman to me that is off. Like, they never do a great enough job giving his motivations for why he feels the need to kill Superman, which I don't think would just never happen in the comics in any shape or form. And then, obviously, the elephant in the room, right, is like the turnaround, you know, the whole Martha scene. And then that doesn't justify at all to me him flipping on a dime and changing his total thinking on Superman just because he has a mother, you know? So,
yeah,
those motivations there just always bug me. The movie, like you said, the movie itself is fun. It's fine. The spectacle is there. The battle is great. Like, there's a lot of great things about all of that. But to me, Batman was off throughout this whole movie. He just never acted like Batman should act, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
And like I said, to me, Superman was Superman. Like, he never wavered from the way he would in the comics, you know?
Yeah. So which do you want to tackle first?
You tell me.
Let's do the Martha one. The flip. Actually, you know what? Let's go back. Because I think the first one, this actually leads up to the Martha one, in my opinion. So let's go back to, like you said, there's not enough backstory. And I agree with you on that. They came into this is, you know, obviously we have Man of Steel being the first movie.
Right.
Then we have this. This is the second movie of the DCEU.
Right.
And this is our newest, latest Batman. This is our debut of Batfleck.
Right.
So, and he's supposed to be an older Batman. So yes. There is no backstory. They tried to, it looks like what they did, they tried to give you the backstory of Batman showing you images and showing you, like, Robin's been killed. You know,
right.
Showing you, and then they had the little one-liners, like, remember the days of fighting penguins. And
right. They sowed enough seeds in there that you understand that he's at the tail end of his career. Like,
right.
He's been Batman for a long time and done a lot of bat things. You know, he's fought the
right.
Joker. He's lost Robin. He's had a whole life that's happened before.
Right.
But somehow all that escaped Superman. Because he's not aware of any of that. He's only aware of the present Batman who's on this raging war against criminals.
But if you go with the timeline of the DCEU, this is all Superman's only been on the planet as Superman for 2 years.
But he's lived his whole life there.
And well, he lived his Batman whole life be, in Smallville. He
but wouldn't
showed
Batman
up in,
make the news? Like, he wouldn't be in a newspaper or on, you know, CBS Smallville or something.
Did it get out? I don't know. It's probably not like social media like it is now.
but if he's taken down the Joker, who is like threatening the world on a global scale with his schemes, surely they've heard of him in Smallville. So
you would think, but either way, my point in that is the backstory that's getting into like Superman. Superman doesn't want to kill Batman.
No, but he definitely has a...
No.
But he has a bias again. Like, he's wanting to go on a crusade through the Daily Planet and take down the Batman.
Right,
you know.
And you know why? Because of Lex Luthor. Luthor is the one that has been sending Clark Kent all the information about how evil Batman is.
Well, right, but...
You know what
Where
I mean?
Where was the contradictory information? Like, that's what I'm saying. He's a journalist, right? Like, so shouldn't he have done his digging and found out all the good that Batman has also done in Gotham?
Well, that's but where in this story did he ever? That's the thing, and he never like you originally. The original discussion we were having was why Batman wanted to kill Superman.
Right. We kind of went off the
rails, but that's fine. That's fine, but. Superman never really wanted to kill Batman.
No, he ever. Didn't. He didn't. No,
so he never even wanted to go after it. He never said, I have to stop him. He never said anything. The only reason he got on his radar was because Luthor told him, you have to kill him. You know.
Well, but even prior to that, he had the scene in where he stopped him in the car. That was prior to Luthor sending him after him, where he says, the next time they put your light in the sky, don't answer it. You're done.
Right. But
that happened.
No, but Luthor was sending him the clippings of all of the bad things that Batman was doing and painting Batman in a bad image. So he thought he'd step in and say, hey, why don't you cut that out? And speaking of that, that's one of my favorites. That is such a great scene because.
Oh, it is a great scene, but.
It's everything leading up to it. First, we get the debut of the latest Batmobile. Right. Which I really like. I know it's not one of your favorites. You like the other, like the more comic
car.
Book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like the tech stuff. So you get that seed and they debut the car with withstanding missiles, bullets, going through a brick wall, jumping through the side of a truck, all of the, you know, having all of the capabilities it has. And then there's this 6'2" man in blue tights. And he doesn't budge.
And yeah, he just drives right into him. Yeah.
It was awesome. So Superman. Like, he tried to swerve to avoid him and hits him, broadsides him, hits him with the side of his vehicle, bounces the vehicle. And I love the Batmobile driving back to the cave.
Yeah.
It's all sparking and smoking because it ran into Superman and he didn't even flinch. And that was like the epitome of Superman. That was like, just that's the Man of Steel just standing there and the car just bouncing off of him. Yeah. I thought that
was
such
great.
A great scene of him.
It
just
was a great scene.
Still.
And we had seen, you know, that was teased in the trailer. So we kind of knew that ahead of time, that little confrontation they were going to have. But yeah, that's a great moment in the movie. And honestly, all of their whole interactions were all very entertaining.
They're a blast.
I mean, the fight was incredible. You know, it was really well done. But yeah, like I said, I understand that Luthor was behind it all and he was sending, you know, he was sowing the seeds to Bruce to sour him on Superman and he was doing the same to Clark trying to sour, you know, he was trying to set the stage. Now, that's the other thing too is we don't really know why he wanted to do that either.
But that's Luthor.
Well, right.
I think Luthor wanted to do it because textbook Luthor, he wants to get rid of Superman.
Right.
You know, it's like that's his.
But why did I don't know why he thinks that Batman is the one to do it.
My theory is the reason that he got the kryptonite out of the Indian Ocean, the reason he brought it here to Gotham Metropolis area, was so that Bruce Wayne would get it.
Right.
Because when you see, like, Bruce Wayne stole it from Luther, Luther has that smug smile, like, right. Okay, the plan's in motion. Like, he didn't want to do anything. He wanted Bruce Wayne to have it. He wanted Bruce Wayne to take that and turn it into a weapon because he's more capable of stopping Superman than Lex Luthor is.
Right.
So I think that was part of Luthor's plan there. As far as, like, Batman wanting to control Superman, it's kind of what was going on in the world. Luthor was turning the world against Superman with that opening scene when Superman didn't kill anybody in that scene with Lois, but they made it look like Superman killed everybody there.
Right. Well, I understand him wanting to control Superman or have a fear of Superman because that goes back to the comics too. Like, mm-hmm. you know, Batman has always treated, you know, like they're friends in the comics, but he's also always had that contingency plan against him because what if he goes rogue?
He has one for every character.
Right.
Which is pretty cool.
But I get the whole thing, you know, obviously it's all set up in the beginning. You know, we see the end of Man of Steel and all in the carnage that happens in Metropolis because of their battle.
Right.
And, you know, you cut to the ground and Bruce is there and... You see all what happens, and I understand all of that, but controlling and killing are two different things. And, like, when did that become the line that Batman was willing to cross that he has never crossed before? Like, he wasn't willing to kill the Joker, and the Joker is, like,
right.
will tell you to your face, I'm going to wipe out the world. But Superman, who has the, you know, quote-unquote, the best intentions, he wants to just kill him. Like, he doesn't want to contain him. He doesn't want to turn him or do this or that. He just wants to take him out. And, like, that's so un-Batman to me. Like, I just don't know. Even with being prodded by Luthor, Batman's a smart dude. You know, like, he should see that he's being manipulated somehow or at least come to his own conclusions. And he doesn't seem the kind of guy to me that's going to be coerced by some clippings in the newspaper or...
Right,
this or that, see, to say I've got to kill Superman. So that to me I've always had an issue with. Just like, you know, when we talked about the end of Man of Steel, I don't like him killing Zod there either, because those are lines that those characters just wouldn't cross. But then if I am to go with that and say, okay, this version of Batman, movie Batman, is different than the comics Batman, and he's willing to cross that line, okay, I'll strap in and go with it because I paid my $10 to watch this. But then he just turns on a dime and goes the other way.
Okay.
And I don't know. Like, it's too inconsistent.
I paid
to
my
me.
$10 to see him kill him.
Well, no, but you know what I mean.
Know.
It's like,
you got me all strapped in here.
I'll go with the story if that's the story
right.
that you're giving me. Like, I'll go with it even though I don't necessarily agree with it. But... if the reasons were compelling enough to Batman to say, I'm going to cross this line and I'm going to kill Superman because I believe that this guy is too dangerous to be left unchecked on the world and, you know, he's going to go crazy one day and destroy us all. If I go that far in my convictions, then finding out that he has a mom that just happens to share the same name as my dead mom doesn't redeem him for me. Like, it just doesn't. It doesn't take away all the reasons that made me want to go there in the first place because he's still the same guy, right?
Right. Okay, so his introduction to Superman, and this is where I said, like, leading up to it is what helps me with the flip. His introduction to Superman, the world's introduction to Superman, was practically the demolition of Metropolis.
Right.
Right? So... he lost a whole building of people
yes.
in that event, right? In basically a 9/11 event, he lost of all of his employees. Then you have on top of that, if that's not motivation enough, on top of that, you have Luthor sowing seeds,
right?
Right. So as much as you say that Batman is a smart dude and he can figure out being manipulated, I think he's older here. It's an older character. He's had a lot of loss. And I think what they're portraying here is a character that is so motivated to not lose anymore, that when, and now we're going to fast forward to his sole quest has been to stop Superman. Now, whether he kills him, controls him, whatever, but that's his sole quest throughout this movie. Even talking to Alfred, he's like, if it's just 1%, we have to take it as an absolute, right?
Right.
When not only, now here's where for me the flip helps. It helps me with the flip. It's not just that he has a mom. It's not just that he has a mom with the same name. It's also Lois. Lois is the one that comes in and tells him. It's his mother. His mother.
Did you put a pin in that for 1 second? One second.
What's that?
When she comes rushing in, because this bothered me. When she comes rushing in, he had already said, you know, you got to save Martha. And Batman's going, why did you say that name? Why did you say that or whatever?
Right.
Lois Lane wasn't there. But all of a sudden she comes running in and says, it was his mother's name. But you didn't hear. How do you know what he was even talking about? You weren't in the room. Like, how did she know that that was what was going on in that room? That kind of bothered me a little bit because I was like, you weren't there.
She heard it as she walked in. She's like, why did you say that name? Why did you? Because he said Martha. He said Martha, Martha. And it's like, you've got to save Martha.
And she couldn't have heard that.
But, all right. That's one thing.
I'm just saying, she couldn't have heard that. That's why I just said put a pin in it. You can go back to your argument. But
so what I'm saying is it humanized him.
I get
that,
it.
That entire thing humanized, instead of being like this alien creature, it was now a man. It was Superman, but it was a man. So that's why I think he did the flip. And all of a sudden he flipped to exactly the character that you're talking about, that you want to have, the Batman that you want, that doesn't kill. And it's almost like you could see it in his face. I thought Affleck did a great job at that, where he said, and he's like, what am I doing? Why am I trying to kill him? He completely flipped.
I get what you're saying.
And I get that.
I get what you're saying. And I mean, you know, again, and I'm not Batman smart, but I'm a smart guy. Like, I understand I can understand everything you're saying. I knew all that too, but it didn't change any of the circumstance. Like, nothing changes about him. It doesn't make him less powerful. It doesn't make him less of a threat necessarily because he's a human.
But it changes his view of him.
But humans do bad things too. Like, the Joker's just a human also, and I still want to stop him. So just because you humanized me doesn't reduce the danger. It doesn't mitigate the risks that Superman poses either way. You know, to me, nothing's changed. You've just put a, now you've just put a name to the face, like you've put a face to him as opposed to...
Have you ever seen the videos of a hunter helping a deer off a frozen pond or something? And then you hear the story, like, the guy can't hunt anymore or something. Because he helped a deer. He saw the... It humanized the deer instead of being a hunter. And it's like, it's that kind of a flip. And it's... I can totally understand that flip. And I get, you know, most people are on your side. Most people are like, that was way too quick. But it's also a movie. You only have so many. You only have 3 hours here.
I know. But, I get it. But
you know what I mean? I completely get the flip. I thought it was perfect that it humanized him because Batman was on a soul quest and it was all of his resources were being put into stopping Superman. And then at that one moment, you have the name, the mother, and Lois. And Lois is a huge thing here. Don't underplay that, because that's the part, like, when Flash came from the future and said Lois is the key. Lois ends up being the key later.
But he also says you were right about him, which means he is going to do something bad.
No, but yeah, but he's also saying it from the future that we needed him because he went back to the wrong time. You were right about him because if you remember in Justice League, they didn't want to bring him back. Everybody except for Batman was worried about bringing Superman back from the dead.
Right.
And so that's the Flash coming back to say, you were right about him. That was good that we did that. That's what he was saying there. Not that that Superman was evil. So there's a lot at play there. But as far as the flip goes, that's how I reconcile it. And to me, it completely makes sense. And that's the title of the movie, Batman v Superman. You know, it's right. that whole entire scene right there. And that battle, let's have some fun and talk about that.
Oh, no, that was awesome.
I thought it was awesome, but at the same time, it shows everything like I just said. Like, Batman has his sole quest is to stop him, and he couldn't.
Right.
And Superman was like, he could not have cared less.
Oh, right. Well,
coming through, like, what are you doing?
Yeah, well, he was like, if I wanted you dead, you'd already be dead. But here's what I thought. Like, okay, fool me once. Like, you caught me once with the kryptonite cloud.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But then I'm going to fly into it again? It's like, come on, man. Like,
yeah, it's
fool me once, shame on you. You know, fool me twice. It's like, you could see him cocking that gun. You knew what was in it.
Yeah.
It's like, you're just going to rush headlong into it a second time.
I loved it's when like, he was punching him and he was starting to get his power back. Like when Batman was punching Superman against the wall and he's getting his power back. And then finally it's like, and you could hear like the thumps.
You're hitting that steel.
Right. Like Superman's face got stronger and stronger with each punch and you could hear it in the thump. And then finally that last one is his head never moves. And it's like, and then you see the look on,
Batman's,
you know,
like,
Ben
Affleck's
face is like, uh-oh. He's back.
Yeah.
That was such a fun.
Well, all
battle
of that.
Right,
it's like
there.
In the beginning, like you said, he, you know, Superman shrugged it off, but it's like, what did you think those guns were going to do? Like, if you're Batman, it's like, why did you even bother with that? Like, that's a couple hundred grand that you could have just put back in your pocket, you know?
Well, he's like, not worried about the money. But...
No, but it's like, you knew that. Like, what did you think you were going to accomplish with that? You knew it wasn't even going to slow him down. So it didn't buy him anything.
But tactically, this is what this is what he might have been thinking. I'm going to hit him with the sound, which I know is not going to do anything to him. He'll just destroy it. I'll hit him with those guns coming up out of dumpsters. That'll give Superman the idea that this is what I got.
Right.
And then I'll hit him with the kryptonite stuff because he doesn't know I have that. He didn't want to open with that. You're setting him up. You're dropping a couple of pawns to make it seem like this is all I have. This is the best you got. And then you hit him with the kryptonite and he's like choking.
Right.
So it kind of a surprise attack, I guess. Because he also had the spear. It's like, why didn't you just lead with the spear? You know, but luckily he didn't because he would have killed him.
Yeah. Well, and he had the spear way down in the bottom where conveniently they ended up, you know, it's like all this battle and then we fall right in front of the spear. It's like,
right.
Come on, man.
Yeah. Not only that, it's Superman that took him there.
Right. It's like, all right.
So I'm going to go with you on that one, but that's movie making. That's fun. That's
it
part
is.
Of the process.
I know. But,
you know, you can't have Superman.
They could end it up in a lot of places. It's like, how did you know that that's where we were going to end up? You know,
I want to know how you fight in that suit of armor that Batman's wearing.
Yeah, it seemed a little clunky. Well, I mean, Tony Stark could do it, so.
That's true.
It seemed a little clunky. It did seem a little clunky, though.
Yeah.
But, you know, you go into war with Superman. I mean, that was very out of the comics, too, though, right? I mean, that was very Frank Miller.
Yes.
I mean, that's exactly how he drew that.
Right. A lot of this is from that.
Well, it was. I mean, it was obviously.
A lot of this Batman,
some of it
anyways,
was based. Yeah, some of it was based on that, especially the battles with Superman.
None of this Superman was based on Frank Miller's Year One Superman.
No, not at all, because, you know, there was no
because
mermaids.
Because that came out after and was horrible.
Yeah. There was no mermaids and there was no, you know, Navy SEALs and, you know, so don't even get me started on that.
Yeah.
No John Romita Jr. here. So, nope. All right. So, I mean, let's talk about my other giant problem with this movie.
Okay.
Jesse Eisenberg. I mean.
Really?
What a horrible
Why?
Lex Luthor. He's horrible.
Why?
He
but
was
why? I've,
terrible.
I was hoping that you had that opinion because
I mean,
I want
he was
to
so
know
much
why.
More Joker to me than Lex Luthor, first of all.
Because of the hair?
The hair and the walk. Like, when I saw him, there was one scene where he was walking and you were seeing him from the back and he was walking and with the hair and the suit.
He definitely looked like Joker.
It was definitely the
I
Joker.
I agree with you.
But,
yep.
But. To me, Lex Luthor is so much more measured and calculated. Like, he just seemed off his rocker. Like, he was just so...
He orchestrated the entire movie.
Yeah, but he was so over the top and again, so much more Joker or Riddler to me than somebody that's like calm and measured. And I mean, I get that he was smart and I get that he orchestrated everything, but I don't know. To me, I hated him. I hated him as Lex Luthor. I thought he was terrible.
Yeah, I like
him. I really did. I don't like him at all.
Now, like everything you just said, though, it's like Gene Hackman in 78 was way more over the top. Miss Tessmacher! I mean, everything was over the top with that. I thought this was a Lex Luthor that was meant as an origin story. That's why he had the hair. He ends without the hair.
Well, right. I don't have any problem with that. Even though in the comics he lost his hair when he was a high school kid. That's why he hated Superman. But, you know. All that notwithstanding. I get that it was an early Lex Luthor, but I don't know. I just didn't like him. I thought the portrayal, I thought it was terrible.
I thought he was smart.
I didn't like his version of Lex at all.
Manipulative and psychotic.
I don't have a problem with him necessarily as an actor. I like him.
Right.
But I didn't like his Lex at all.
It's funny because I've heard a lot of people say that, and I've always wondered why people didn't like it, because I don't see the flaw in it. I think he portrays a Lex Luthor. It's not exactly Lex Luthor, but I don't think it's so far off that it would warrant hate. I hated it.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I didn't like it at all.
I thought he was good. I thought he was it. When you think of all of the stuff that he did, and a lot of the character of Lex Luthor in this, it wasn't done with like Eisenberg on screen. Everything that happened in the desert with Lois at the beginning, that was all orchestrated by Luthor.
Right. There was a lot of behind this. There was a lot of his machinations happening. Right. You know, and a lot of what you were seeing was him behind the scenes. And I get that.
Right.
I don't know. Like I said, it's just something about it. I can't necessarily put my finger on it, I guess. But like viscerally, I dislike it. I just disliked it a lot.
Is it the way Eisenberg acted? Like,
could be. Like, to me, he was stuttery. Like when he was given his acceptance speech or whatever it was, that
yes,
like he was too stuttery and just not collected. You know, just right. Not calm. And like I said, to me, Lex Luthor is very measured. Not that he can't like have outbursts. Like even if you look at like John Cryer on Supergirl, like I think he's a great Lex Luthor. But he still has outbursts. Like, he still will raise his voice.
He's got a temper,
and,
right.
And throw a little temper.
But he's smoother.
But he's right. He's smooth.
Right.
He's like,
I could
and
go
obviously,
with that.
he's playing a much more mature version of Lex Luthor, who's later in his life. But
right.
Even if you go back to, like, Michael Rosenbaum on Smallville, even at a younger age, because he was supposed to be Lex in his 20s.
Right.
Right.
Well,
he was still.
Even younger.
Well, Clark was in high school, but Lex, even at that time, was older and had graduated. So, like, I always pictured him in his early 20s and up. But, again, he was more reserved, you know, and more, like I said, it was coldly calculating.
I see what you're saying.
Whereas
I
this guy was just too, he was just too over the top. Like I said, to me, great Riddler, you know, maybe a great Joker, you know, definitely doesn't compare to like a Heath Ledger or whatever, but great Riddler type of characterization. But I didn't like his Lex. Like I said, I just didn't think he embodied Lex at all.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It's when you put it in that context, it's basically based off of his speech pattern, which was, it was a little bit more helter-skelter, a little more, like you said, Riddler. And the Lex Luthor that we know, even when you read him in the comics, he's way in the face of everything. He's always very calm.
Right. He's toned down. He's reserved.
Very reserved.
Yes.
And very, very calculated. Whereas I felt in this, he was very calculated.
He was.
I thought he was very smart. I mean,
like
I said, he orchestrated the entire thing. I thought the only time he was really reserved was like at the end when he was in jail. He was reserved right up until like when Batman left, and then he went back to his Riddler self and ran at the door, ran at the cell door and started drooling on it.
Right, because I didn't like the red capes are coming scene with.
I can agree with that. I didn't mind it, but I see what you're saying.
And then like the tick 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 thing at the end, like
right.
That just like I said, it just seemed too over the top for me, and I didn't. Like I said, if he was named Edward Nigma through this entire movie, it wouldn't have bothered me at all, you know?
Right, right.
And also a smart character that could have orchestrated all of that stuff, too.
Well, I don't know if Riddler's that smart.
Well, look at
Luther's
some of the things
in the
comics. Luther's
one of the smartest people.
Right, but he did 0 year. Like, the Riddler was behind some pretty big events in the comics, too. So he could have pulled off something along the same lines. Definitely, and you know, obviously he's not as smart as Lex is, but yeah, I don't know. Like I said, that was above everything else. My biggest problem with the whole movie was him, even more so than the Martha or any of the other stuff. So
really,
yeah.
See I'm going to call myself this, but that's why ignorance is bliss. Like I know who Luther is.
Right.
I don't know the comic as well as you. I don't know it as in depth. And it's like, I understand. I completely agree with you. He's not the calm Luther. But when I go into these movies, I leave that stuff out.
Right.
You know,
and I have a harder time doing that.
Right. And so. It's and a lot of people do because they want that. And Eisenberg went out and tried to do his version.
Take. Right. He had a take.
Right. He had a take. Sure. And it's like.
That's where Zack Snyder comes in, right? It's like.
Yeah.
Every actor's free to have whatever take they want to take. It's up to the director to take the movie in the direction they want it to go in. So. Either he gave him complete freedom to do whatever he wanted, or that's what Zach wanted, you know?
Right.
Who knows?
You can't compare, but when you say, like, people that have done Joker, and, you know, like, we have two Academy Award winners.
Right.
because you have more freedom. Right. It's because Joker is that insane.
Yes, it's easier to take that, to have a take on the Joker, because
right.
as long as you're doing something over the top, they're willing to kind of let you explore that a little bit. Whereas I think with Lex, it should have been harder to do that.
But at the same time, in Eisenberg's defense, it's like if you just play that flat and you play it as like a Lex and smooth, it's not as compelling on screen. It's not as compelling in this environment in the Batman v Superman. You know, I think he was trying to stand out in a movie that wasn't really about him.
Right.
But he was the big villain. But he really wasn't really he didn't have a lot of screen time. So right. I think if you play it the other way, and especially where it's supposed to be a new origin, it's a new origin story. So I get why they did it. I get why Snyder allowed it, to your point that Snyder could have corrected it. It didn't ruin the movie for me. And I really didn't give it that much thought until like what you just brought up. I'm glad it makes sense to me why you don't like it. It just doesn't. It doesn't register as
right.
strongly
well, again,
with
we,
me.
You know, as we've talked about it before. We don't have to share opinions.
Right.
You know, so.
No, but I actually do agree with your opinion. It just doesn't, bother me as much as it bothers you. But now that I understand it that way, and you're 100% right. Like, Luther is very calm, very, like, you know, what's his name? What is it? He was in Twister. Carrie, yeah. He plays this character Despero on Psych.
Yeah.
And he's very calm and very, you know, and a lot like Luther.
Right.
But he's not as much of a bad guy. He's a jewel thief. But but he's that type of a character where it's like under the worst circumstances, he's very calm and reserved, which is a lot like Luther. And it's like, but I'm picturing that if they had played that role that way, in this movie, I don't see it playing the same way. I don't see it showing up on screen the same way. I think it wouldn't have.
I don't know. I guess we won't know because we can't see it, but.
It's in the Snyder Cut.
Yeah, that's right. Right. Like I said, we don't know because we'll never see it, but.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know. I disagree a little bit because I think it would have helped me actually get into the movie a little bit more if he was more more Luther.
So like I understand the speech patterns, but I do think I love the line that he gave when Lois called him psychotic. And then the line that he gave, it's like a three-syllable word for any thought.
That you can't understand or something like that.
Yeah, that's too big for little minds.
Right.
And
that's great.
But I love stuff like that. Yeah. And it's like, and he delivered it so quickly.
Right.
But to your point, if he could have delivered that a little smoother, a little calmer, like almost like dismissive of her.
Right. You could have still said the same thing.
Right.
Like, they didn't have to rewrite any of his dialogue. It wasn't specifically what he said. Although the red capes are coming. Like if he was like a more mature or reserved Lex, like I don't think that ever comes out of his mouth.
No.
But most of his dialogue, you wouldn't have to change if he portrayed the character in a different manner. It just would have been delivered. It would have been delivered differently. But again, I don't see the scene at the very end probably doesn't happen the same way if he's not psychotic Lex Luthor, you know?
No, at that very end, it was very much like when Batman attacked Joker.
Right.
In Dark Knight, you know, and he just laughed at him like, and it's like,
do your worst.
Yeah, do your worst. And yeah, so yeah, I see what you're saying. And it's funny because now I'm going through some of those lines, like I just said, with that, like, you're so psychotic or you're psychotic. And then imagine if he had delivered that and like just like rolled his eyes and went, you know, and like very calmly just talked to her. That, oh, man, now you got me going because now I'm thinking
chills,
like that could have been. Yeah, it would have made it even more villainous because you would have been like, oh, my God, he's just, you know, like
he seemed too petulant. To me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that, again, that's what I think bothers me a little bit about it. That's like what the way he delivered that response to her seemed childlike, almost childish. Like, like, oh, you know, I'm rubber, you're glue type of thing. You know what I mean?
Right. He was more petulant than arrogant.
Right.
And that's like Luther is very arrogant.
Right. I think I would have wanted to see that arrogance in that. And there were times where the arrogance showed through in this too. Like there was a couple of moments where he did show a little bit of that. You know, he definitely still felt like he was the smartest guy in the room every time, but he was also very childish and immature. And you know,
and you know,
the whole thing with the candy, you know, sticking the candy in the general's mouth or whatever, and then licking his fingers, and it's like that's just not the Lex that I envision when I think of Lex Luthor. And again, like I said, they don't have to give me that. Like they're free to do whatever they want to do with it, but I don't have to like it either. That's the whole thing. I respect their right to take that chance and deliver the character that way because they made the film, not me. They can do whatever they want, but I don't have to go with it because that's my right as the viewer. So,
But it's still a fun movie.
Oh, it is. It's a lot of fun. Like I said, there's things that irritate me about it, but as an overall experience, I liked it. Like I said, I'm not a hater of this movie like some people are. You know, I definitely think it has merit, and it's still watchable for me. Like, I'll still watch it again. You know, it's definitely not unwatchable, but there's things that do bother me that I have a hard time going with. So, I mean, this thing, same Man of Steel we talked about. Like, I like that movie too, but I have problems. I have some problems with it also. So, like, you don't have to love a thing start to finish in everything about it to still like it, you know? So.
Right, but why is it that, like, a DC movie like this, it gets so much criticism for the things that miss? And people don't focus on, like, all of the fun that the movie is.
Yeah, I can't answer
your
question.
But Marvel...
Yeah, I don't know.
You know what I mean? Isn't that weird? Like Marvel movies, there's parts of, like...
Exactly. There's parts of those movies that I don't like, too. But they seem to get a pass.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that... I don't know why that is either, honestly.
Is it because they were first? Like, the DCU
were they
didn't
first, though? Like...
Well, Iron Man, the entire Marvel MCU started with Iron Man.
Right, but this wasn't the first Batman or Superman we've had on screen, so...
But it's the first of the new DCEU.
Yes, they were the first of their so-called connected universe.
Right.
But we had Batman before, so I don't know that they got a bad rap because of the Marvel movies.
Well, let's say, like, so, like, One of the criticisms I remember from back then, it was partly in this, but mostly in Justice League, was that they put everybody together too quickly. Whereas the MCU, each character got an origin story, or at least like in the cases of like, excuse me, Black Widow and Hawkeye, they at least showed up in something, right?
They were fleshed out multiple times.
A little bit, yeah. You'd seen them. But the DC went in a completely different direction, and they just were like, let's put them all together. And like, you'd never seen Aquaman before.
Right,
you
know, but
you got a glimpse on screen, but...
But we had seen half of them, right? Because we had BVS, so we had Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. So,
barely, but yes.
Well, I mean...
Well, we had Batman and Superman,
but... We had a pretty good chunk of Wonder Woman, though. I mean...
I love it.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite scenes in all of these movies.
If Lex was the worst part, she's the best. You know? I mean,
yeah.
Her introduction and that music and her whole battle with Doomsday and all that, like, she was great.
Yeah. That first blast, I just happened to notice this time for the first time. That first blast, when she drops in,
yeah,
she blocks that with her arms.
Yeah, with her bracelets.
With the bracelets.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I mean, that's a hell of a... She saves Batman.
Right.
She jumps in, takes the blast, not with her shield.
Right.
And you're like, ugh. Yeah. I mean, she's... I thought that was... She's
completely badass, yeah. I mean, it was great. But, you know, to go back to Justice League, so you have three established characters based on this movie that we just watched. Well, then you have three new characters who could just be the Black Widow and Hawkeye of that movie. You know what I mean? That were brand new, that you didn't really know that well. Or the Vision, you know, from the first Avengers movie. So, I mean, I still don't think that was a fair criticism either. That doesn't mean Justice League was a great movie, but I don't buy that particular criticism of it. Like, I don't think that they had to have had their own three movies before they could be in Justice
League. No, it's a different way to... Yeah, it's just a different way to do it. But I think people's expectations were raised so high that when like this came out, 2016, we're like eyeballs deep into MCU,
right?
And then this comes out, and everybody's like, "All right,
I mean, we went pretty deep on Justice League when we talked about it, so I have a whole host of reasons why I think that movie didn't work. But introducing those characters, I don't think are chiefly among the reasons why. I think they did a fine enough job of introducing those characters into the movie. It just had other problems altogether.
But never mind that. It's like my original question was more to like the misses
to this one,
on characters.
But like, I don't know why.
Like you said, like a bad interpretation of Luther or a bad... But can you think in the MCU of bad interpretations of characters that... We've kind of, it's hard to say because
I can't, well, none
because
of them
we've
stand
let
out
it slide.
To me. Well, none of them stand out to me as much as Lex stands out to me. Like, to me, he's a big swing and a miss. I can't think of anybody in any of the MCU movies that I can say to that degree.
Is it possible that there aren't as many iconic characters
Well, they definitely,
you know what I mean? Like, Superman is like
prior to their movies hitting, none of them were as iconic as the...
Exactly.
Maybe except for Captain America. But even he wasn't as
Spider-Man,
iconic. Well, Spider-Man came much later, though.
Right.
But yeah, in the pantheon of the MCU characters, they were all C-level characters prior to their movies coming out. Whereas like in Batman versus Superman, you've got the holy trinity of DC characters.
Right.
You've got the second most well-known villain in the MCU, I mean, in the DC universe. So, yes, they were a little bit more iconic. So I think people had more preconceptions with those characters than they would have with any of the Marvel characters, just because of the stature that they had. But I still, with that being said, I can't go back to any of those Marvel movies and point to one person that I feel like is just a huge miss.
So I think where you said where you have like a C or B level character, you have less expectations on how closely they have to portray that character. They have a little bit more leeway on how they could, you know, and one of our favorite things to the point, the most iconic character when they finally brought him out, Spider-Man, what do we compliment him on? How close he is to the right. icon. It's, you know what I mean? They didn't do webs through the wrists. They didn't take liberties with the character. They tried to, the closest they came is with the suit. And they gave him, you know, the iron suit and all of, you know.
But I think the core difference is, and again, you can say they're lesser known characters so we have lesser expectations of them necessarily, but I can't point to a single one that felt radically different from their comic book counterparts. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, they all acted like they should act, whereas I've already pointed out where I think Batman didn't act right. like he should act.
And you're not wrong.
Superman.
You're not wrong.
And I think Marvel is just more true to the roots of the characters, so we're more willing to forgive a small misstep here and there because we feel like right. they have represented the character the way we expect them to be represented.
Right.
And now, then you could DC, also, yeah, but you could also criticize them for saying, well, they took no chances, right? Because they just carbon copied their comic book characters onto the movies, where DC is kind of swinging and missing with some of their, you know, but at right. least they're taking chances. So you could go both ways with it, if depending on how you want to look at it. But that's why I think we're more forgiving of the Marvel, because they've been more representative of the character.
I think where Marvel took chances was they went with C and B characters.
Right, right. Their chances were with who they chose.
Right.
Not how they chose to portray them.
You know? But I think that gives them the liberty of, or a little bit of leeway in expectations. And I think what, you know, it's funny just having this discussion. It's like it really jumps out at me now. It's like DC, all they've done is take their biggest characters.
Right.
And then try to take a risk with how they were trying to have a fresh take on their most iconic characters.
Right.
That's not a recipe for success.
Right. It's hard to do.
Because you can't take the icon and then say, here's a new take. No, right. It's a reason it's an icon.
Right.
That's like all of a sudden one state in the country saying all our stop signs are going to be green.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't do that. Well, everybody's like you said, flying yeah. through the light.
And to go back to the point you were making before, like when I'm watching Guardians of the Galaxy, whatever version of Peter Quill you give me, yeah. that's the version, because I have no idea what the comic book
that's what
Peter
I mean,
Quill
right.
even looks like. You know,
right?
Because at that point, I had never even read a Guardians comic book. So,
right. So you have more leeway, and right. what ends up happening is when you go to read the comic book, he's now Chris Pratt,
right?
You know, so they took risks on bringing obscure characters to the screen, and DC took risks on bringing icons and changing the icon.
Right.
It's like, which. I got to agree. It didn't bother me, but now having more, you know, conversations about this, I see the point. It still doesn't bother me, right. but I see where they failed.
The other thing, you too, know. Is I think the reasons why, maybe the reasons why DC took some of these opportunities, because it's also hard to have a fresh take on these characters. Like, what Superman story are you going to tell that we haven't already see, like, you know what I mean? We
haven't they shouldn't already have done seen. It. If you wanted to do the MCU thing, they should have started with Flash.
Right.
Or they should have started with Green Lantern. Should have started with Green Arrow.
Right.
Or you start with
Cyborg or somebody, you know.
Yeah. Even an Aquaman.
Right.
If you had started with started.
Your Boston's showing.
Yeah. Well, wow, did that slip out?
Yeah.
If you started with Aquaman.
Aquaman. Man, you're really all over the place now.
If you started with Aquaman, I think, because one of the things I liked about Aquaman was that brought credibility to a character that had been a joke.
Well, right. And also a fresh take on a character that's a little bit
yeah.
less known, right? Because that's not the
right.
Aquaman we know from the comics at all.
But the one we
all
love
now. We were a little bit more forgiving of it because people don't have cemented in their minds what Aquaman should be. You know, unless
our age have Aquaman riding around in an invisible jet.
Right. Well, and
hitching a ride everywhere.
And, you know, water skiing on dolphins and stuff like that.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, he's a meme at best, right? So, but that's why I think that worked, because people didn't have this concrete preconceived notion of who Aquaman was supposed to be. But then they also, let's start with Wonder Woman. Build your whole franchise off of Wonder Woman, who in my opinion, she is a direct carbon copy. Like, she is so close to her comic book character, it's not even funny.
Right.
So that's how you do it right, you know? But she also had the luxury of not having to follow seven other movie versions of herself on screen. So
she's the first big,
so there's no fresh take for her.
That is the fresh take.
Now, people do know, like, people our age do know the TV show a little
bit. Linda Carter,
So you do have a version of that, but I would argue that not.
That's a TV show.
But they're not that different either. Now, obviously, she was more of a warrior in the movies and, you know, more, you know, kick butt than she was on the TV show. But the core of her character and personality was very much the same. You know, it's just that in the 70s on TV, you weren't going to get a sword and a shield and, you know.
Right.
And all of but
you got her spinning around.
Yeah. But, you know, you had the lasso and you had all that. And now, to be fair, the sword and the shield are a much more recent addition to Wonder Woman also. Because for the first 50 or so years of her comic book life, she only ever had the last.
I didn't really know her
that
much
have
with a sword and a shield.
She never had a sword and a shield. That's more like New 52 and up kind of versions of Wonder Woman. So
more Amazonian.
Right. But like you said, start with her and make her the tentpole of your franchise. Like, at one point, I thought that she was going to become the Robert Downey Jr. of the DCEU. And she might have.
Drunk?
But she might have if it had continued on. Now I think we're at the point where we're probably not gonna get that. But to me, she would have been the glue that showed up in every movie in a cameo scene or whatever and tied it all together. I think we talked about that when we talked about the lost episode Wonder Woman that nobody will ever hear. But but like to me, like I said, she should have been the glue that held all these movies together, because she was done right. You know, and look how successful her movie was.
Right, her character was done. She is an icon.
Right.
And it was done correctly.
Right.
And for some reason, like you said, I don't know why, but they've taken these three other icons, Luther, Batman, and Superman. And you know the other one they kind of, and I don't understand, I meant to ask you about it. They kind of screwed up Jimmy Olsen. Did you see that?
Who was he even in this movie? Was he in this movie?
Yeah. He's the CIA agent that gets killed.
Oh, really?
He says
said James, right?
I think he said James Olsen, Jimmy Olsen, James Olsen.
Okay, I didn't even catch that. But yeah, I don't.
He's the photographer in the desert, and he says Jimmy Olsen. And I meant to say you that.
I didn't even realize that was supposed to be
but
James.
I'm like, is that just his, like, disguise name?
Right.
Like, he's not the real Jim, because he never shows up otherwise.
Right.
But it's like, they're like, what's your name? And he's like, he has this. They give him his credentials or whatever, and it's like James Olsen.
I probably did notice that the first time, but I didn't pick up on it the last night when I was watching it again. Yeah, I don't know why that change was made to him either. And
it's like they turned him into a dead CIA agent.
Yeah.
Speaking of other little things, did you notice Luther's number, his prison number?
I was looking at it, but it didn't connect to anything.
They said it when he came in. When they were bringing Batman in, and they were opening the door or whatever, and they're like, it's prisoner AC-23-1-9-2-3-1-9-4-0, Action Comics 23-1940.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, I didn't get
it. I heard it, and as soon as they started rifling it off this time I was watching it, I was like, AC, I'm like, Action as soon Comics. As they said AC, I'm like, Action Comics, and they're like, 2-3-1-9-4-0, I was like, oh, that's got to be it. So I looked it up. I'm like, that's the first appearance of Luther.
No, that's awesome, though, but I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's also the first, that's the first mention of the Daily Planet, too.
In that same, oh, yeah.
On that same, in the same issue, yeah.
That's cool. But yeah, see, that's cool. Stuff like that I love, you know.
Yeah.
Because you know, most people don't even pick up on that stuff.
Yeah.
But
I like all that stuff, and that's one that I happened to pick up on this time. I was like, oh, that's got to mean something, you know. The other one that I thought I wanted to ask you about is Lois drowning.
Yeah.
And she's banging, and Superman's up in the sky. Is that a callback to 78 when Lois was banging on the car and she was basically drowning in sand and dirt?
Probably.
You know what I mean? I felt like watching it this time, I was like, hey, wait a minute. And then we talked about this last week.
I haven't seen Superman, the motion picture.
Yeah, but you remember what happened.
I mean,
to
I do
Lois,
remember
right?
it, but yeah. But yeah, I didn't put the connection together because I haven't seen that movie, and whereas you've seen it recently because you bought the 4K version of it. So
yeah, but she's like,
I remember that because you said it, but like if I was sitting here 5 seconds ago, I wouldn't have remembered that scene.
Right, right.
So, but yeah, definitely, again, everything has to mean something. So I'm sure it was a little bit of a callback to that.
Yeah, that's how I felt watching it this time. I don't know why. I just was like, hey, wait a minute. That's kind of like 78. And what was the other one? Oh, did you notice on that post-apocalyptic dream sequence? And when they first come in, there's the, you see the Omega symbol in the ground. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, why is that one
of
the
symbols?
I looked. Yeah. It's also, and yeah, the symbol is like end of days, end of, end, the end or last.
Right. But it's the Omega symbol, and that's the symbol for Darkseid. They were, the winged guys were parademons. Like, that, again, all part of the...
That's all supposed to be the Snyder
Cut
stuff.
It's all part of the abandoned Justice League movie, right? All that was supposed to lead up to Darkseid in the Justice League movie, and then it just never really materialized because, again, of all the issues that happened with the Darkseid movie. So they were just, like, breadcrumbs that went nowhere, ultimately.
Right.
But yeah, I definitely... Again, because watching this movie, was super excited the first time I watched it because I'm like, oh my god, that's Darkseid. Oh my god, those are parademons.
Right.
You know, you're like, I know what all this stuff is, you know? And I couldn't wait to see the Justice League two-part adventure, you know, that we were supposed to get. And then, you know, obviously we know what happened. But yeah, I knew what all that was, you know, the first time I saw it.
See, that's the thing, though, that I think that, all right, all the mistakes they made, the risks that they took with characters, I think a lot of this stuff would have paid off if they had gone forward with the other additional movies.
I was just going to say that, too. I bet you we would look back on this movie differently if we had gotten, like, a satisfying two-part Justice League Darkseid movie.
Right.
You know, because, again, you have the whole, like, looking at this movie now and knowing that the DCEU, for all intents and purposes, is done and probably being rebooted or whatever, you know, the Flash scene with, you know, coming back makes no sense at all. Like, it just doesn't mean anything. The whole nightmare, like, all that stuff, it just doesn't pay off. It doesn't mean anything. Now, to me, it's just clogging up this movie and doesn't even need to be in there. Because it never pays off. But yeah, I think we would look back on this movie as the setup to what should have been great. You know?
Right.
It should have been a great experience. So in some ways, it's a little unfair to judge the setup based on the payoff that we didn't get. But
yeah. Yeah, and that's the other flaw is I've said that since we lost the Justice League that we were supposed to get. I've said their biggest mistake was listening to the critics.
Right. They bowed to pressure because this movie didn't perform the way they thought it should. And they took that criticism and allowed it to derail their Justice League plans. And if they would have just stayed the course, then maybe, you know, it's the same thing with, you know, Star Wars. Like, people, like, does The Last Jedi become better now that we've seen Rise of Skywalker? You know what I mean?
If they
pay off later, you go back and look at the previous installment with different view. because because now some of the things that you see in this that maybe you didn't understand pay off later.
Right.
Because again, I was thinking of that last night when I was watching this and when I was going through all of those scenes, just thinking, none of this needs to be here. Like, it could all just go, and that's 30 minutes of this movie that we buy back because it doesn't mean anything in the context of the movie we're watching.
Well, I don't blame them. I mean, this one here was...
Well, no, I mean, you can't go back...
It was an $873 million flop.
Right, so right, again.
It made the money. I don't understand. If they had made all the Justice... They could have made three Justice Leagues, and they all would have made... I think they would have gone up in value.
Right. We talked about that before, too. Even when we talked about Justice League, it's like, I'd like to have a flop like that, you know.
Yeah,
I'd love to have an $873 million flop. But the problem with it was is that this movie didn't gain steam. Like, it started strong out of the gate and went the opposite direction because of reviews and people's response to it. Whereas most of the Marvel movies all project upwards.
Right. Everybody's like, who? Who's Guardians of the Galaxy?
I think this one had. I don't remember the numbers. You're probably looking at it now, but this one probably had a phenomenal opening weekend, right?
Actually, it did 166 million opening weekend.
Well, it's not a.
It only grossed 330 in the U.S.
Yeah,
but worldwide was 873.
Right. And I think that's part of what led to their rethinking of the franchise or rethinking of their plans, because that's not a lot for, like, I don't know what Avengers did domestically, but like, this is what they were trying to replicate, right? Was like Marvel's Avengers numbers, which, were over $1 billion. So I think in their context, this just didn't do what they were, it didn't meet expectations. You know, whether you could argue whether the expectations were fair or not are irrelevant, it's like maybe they shouldn't have been shooting that high in the first place. Nevertheless, they were, and they didn't, they didn't get to where they needed to go. But like in the context of all three movies, this isn't the one that's really talked about negatively so much as Justice League is, I mean, there are people that didn't like this movie, but it didn't get near the hate that Justice League got.
Yeah. Right. All right, here's Avengers numbers. I didn't know Avengers did this well.
Yeah. Oh, no, it was crazy.
It was $5 million cheaper to make because it was $220 million to make Avengers. Opening weekend, $207 million.
Right.
It grossed in the U.S. $623 million and $1.5 billion.
Right.
Cumulative world.
And so I think their expectations.
So almost
they were
twice
thinking
as
the
much.
Same, right. They were thinking the same numbers for this movie. So even out of the gate, it probably underperformed on this opening weekend by, $40 or $50 million,
But you know what's sad about that though is you're coming in on a failure. You're basing it off of how you compare to somebody else when it's like, that's not like, I don't base how I like your business and my business.
Right, they're different.
They're different.
Right.
I don't base them off of
The barometer should have been, did it make money? And if it made money, which it did, they didn't lose money on this movie.
No.
So that's why I'm saying maybe they shouldn't have been thinking about that comparison at all.
Oh, I'm sorry. What did I say? Avengers was 220. I don't know. I thought I said 225. Batman Superman was 250 to make it.
Okay.
Not 225.
So it was a little bit more.
So it was $30 million cheaper to make Avengers.
Right. And it did.
And
it did almost that much more. Yeah.
It made double.
Yeah.
Almost double. So.
Regardless of what you're comparing yourself to, every movie hits theaters with opening week projections. Like they put projections out for every movie that gets released. Whether they're comparing it to, another movie or not. Like even Trolls World Tour or whatever was going to hit theaters with projections for opening weekend. And the reality of those numbers is how they judge whether it was a success or a failure. I guess the question is, where do they get their projections from? And are they always accurate? That's the
question.
Even
at that, it's like, So you have projections, and what if, and if you don't meet them, it's a failure, but you still made money. So right. Then what's a success?
Right.
It doesn't make sense to me, but the only reason I'm upset is it ruins the content that I like to take.
Well, right. Well, cause again, it really ruined the rest of the DCEU for us. Right.
Right.
Because if this thing was considered a success, we get our double Justice League movie. Then we get our Flash and Cyborg movies that we were going to get. Like so many things were planned that all got scrapped because right. The Justice League was a failure. And the Justice League was a failure because of their response to this movie. And only that reason, you know, because if they didn't start tinkering with those plans. Now, there's still a chance that we would have got two and a half hour movies of Justice League and they still wouldn't have been good.
Right.
But then we couldn't blame it on their response to this. We could just say, look, they took their shot with these 5 hours worth of Justice League and it just wasn't great. And that's fine and that's fair, but I would rather have it fail with its original intent than fail because they went back and tinkered with the formula so much that they didn't even give themselves a chance to be successful. Like the end product that we got for Justice League was so far off of what it was supposed to be. I can't even imagine how anybody in good conscience put that out and thought it was going to be a success, you know, because everything that could have gone wrong with the production of that movie went wrong. And then they put it out there anyways. And then they're surprised that it didn't do well. It still made, I don't know how many $100 million profit. So it still didn't lose money, but you know, obviously it never hit it. Cause again, in my mind, they're thinking if the Avengers can do $1.5 billion with the cast of characters that they have, then we should be able to take the Justice League with Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman and easily do $1.5 billion.
Right.
So I think that's where, you know, it was measured as a failure because, you know, those characters should have performed better than the Marvel characters did because they're much more well-known characters at the time.
They're the icons.
Now they're not because now everybody knows these Marvel characters. But
exactly.
But at the time, they were nobody characters going up against their three juggernauts of the comic book world, you know.
Right.
I would say outside of Spider-Man for Marvel, these are the three most well-known characters in existence, you know, as far as comic books go.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, to your point of it tracking poorly, meaning Batman v Superman, it says on Wikipedia, it's like, excluding Thursday previews, it earned $53.89 million on Friday, which was the fifth biggest Friday ever. It fell 37.8% on Saturday, which is the second worst superhero opening Friday to Saturday drop, only behind the 40% drop of The Dark Knight Rises.
Right. Well, again, I think that's because it started – because everybody that – the anticipation brought everybody in on day one and day two. But then the reviews hit, and by Saturday, it tanked. Now, I didn't realize that that Batman movie had such a big drop.
You know why? You don't remember why?
No.
Wasn't that the movie where the guy went open fire?
Right, but was that on
opening night?
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I guess
that was opening night, and that scared the the country.
Well, that makes sense. But it also was the worst of those three movies, too. So,
but it wasn't a 40%. Nobody walked out of that movie going, wow, I don't want to see.
Right.
I don't think nobody thought.
It shouldn't have had that big of a drop.
Right. I didn't think. But I think that drop was more about the shooting than it was about the movie itself.
Yeah, I remember that happening, but I didn't even remember which of the three movies it happened on, to be honest with you. So,
yeah, I remember that one. I remember.
That's what I'm saying. I think this movie had all the hype going into it, and then everybody that saw it on day one and day two, all the critics, all the, you know, Rotten Tomatoes hit.
Rotten Tomatoes,
and it was certified, you know, stale or whatever, and rotten, and everybody stopped going to see it.
Certified stale.
Yeah.
Was it bread?
Yeah. It's buttered toast.
All right, let's try to go out on a high note here. And
Lex
this
Luthor,
is the bright
not Lex
side.
Luthor, Lois Lane and Alfred. Those are the high notes.
Yeah. What was like one of your favorite scenes of this movie?
Well, I mean, honestly, it's that whole battle. With Superman and Batman.
Which one?
The
Superman Batman.
Yeah, the
battle?
Superman Batman battle. I mean, the Doomsday stuff was okay. I don't want to get into the... Like, I didn't like the Doomsday CG. I think they just stole the CGI from Lord of the Rings and had himself a cave troll. I didn't like that necessarily. But the battle was great. Honestly, I guess I take it back. My favorite scene is that dropping in of Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Why did you bring him back to the city?
The port is abandoned.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best scene in the movie to me.
That's the best, like, singular scene.
Yes.
But, like, the actual...
But even
that
all of that.
Battle,
actually, I think the best... Yeah. My favorite moment with that, though, is when, like, she gets knocked... Like, when Doomsday knocks her on her butt, and she goes flying back, and she's laying on the ground, and then she just makes this, like, cocky smile and gets up, you know... Like,
yeah,
that's the best
up,
moment
gets
in the
her
whole...
sword.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the whole thing. Because, again, she's, like, the... I want to curse, but I'm not going to because I don't want you to bleep me out. But, I mean, she's like the baddest, you know what, of all three of them, you know?
Yeah.
I mean.
I loved the build up to that. I liked her being on the plane, getting ready to leave.
Yeah.
And she sees it and she's just like, all right, I got to go.
Yep.
I mean, her drop in was awesome. It, like I said.
And it's that
one
introduction
of
that
the
music. Yeah,
because
that's
yeah.
the first time that, we had heard it.
No, it's not. That music, every time they show her on screen throughout the movie. That music's in the background. Check it out. Next time you see it.
Maybe. I guess that's the first time it's pronounced enough that you,
Oh, yeah. It's
yeah.
blaring in that yeah. scene. But they'll have that music playing, the Wonder Woman music playing in the background yeah. every time she shows up on screen. If he looks at a picture of her, you know, Bruce Wayne looking at a picture
yeah, that's
of
right.
her,
I remember it. I do remember it there
it's
when he's looking
very
at that
early
photo.
On.
Yeah.
Very early on in the movie, I think you see her and it's like you hear that music and you're like, and obviously the first time you see it, that doesn't register because
right.
that's not Wonder Woman's music.
Right.
But after having seen the movie Wonder Woman and now go back and watch it, it's like,
right.
oh man, it jumps out. But there was another part in that the Doomsday battle that I thought was really cool. And this was the first time I believe I saw this one in 4K and it really, really jumped out at me. Because you could see that with the HDR, you could see that in the shadows and stuff. Doomsday fires one of his blasts and Superman and Wonder Woman stand there and take the blast, like the explosion happens or whatever. And you see Batman dive underneath an angled wall.
Oh, yeah.
For protection. And it's pretty cool because Wonder Woman just stands there and takes the full brunt of the blast along with Superman. But the one human guy,
right.
he's like, I'm out of here.
Yeah, he's like, I shouldn't
he
be here.
Take
right?
it.
He's like,
but
you know.
But to your point of her being such a badass, it's like she's just standing there toe to toe with Superman.
Right.
And taking that. And I thought that was, she is really, really yeah. good.
The other part that, you know, again, now I'll get back to something. You wanted to go out on a high note, but, you know, the whole setup for this movie is Batman.
Moody's back.
Well, it's like Batman, right? He wants to stop Superman because of all the devastation that's caused when he's fighting Zod in Metropolis, right? And then Batman decides the thing to do is to drag Doomsday back into Gotham City.
Right, but it's an abandoned area.
Yeah, but he's not
going to clarify.
He's not going to stop there. It's like, you know.
Wow.
I mean, there was a lot of carnage happening
right.
in the city too. There was a lot of collateral damage going on there, and I'm like, well,
right.
you know,
shoes on the other foot.
Yeah,
now,
so
isn't it, big guy?
The pot calling the kettle black because BVS 3 was going to be Superman coming after you.
Yeah.
For all the damage you caused.
Being a hypocrite.
Yeah. Or it's actually going to be Damage Inc. They're coming to sue you because of all the damage you caused.
Exactly.
So I just thought that was funny. I did think about that when I saw all the carnage that Doomsday was creating.
Of course you did.
Yeah. You have to, right?
No.
You do.
I get along pretty good without thinking these things until I talk to you.
Well, that's why you talk to me.
Exactly.
So,
differing opinions.
That's right.
All right. That good?
I think so.
All righty. What did you guys think of it? Let us know on Twitter at brightside_chat. You can email us at thebrightsidechat@gmail.com. Check out all the great podcasts at Nerdy Legion at nerdylegion.com. And please, on iTunes, rate, review, and subscribe. And what do we got coming up this week, John? We've got new books coming out.
All right. So, yeah, coming up this Wednesday, we've got Batman number 89, the third printing of that.
Ooh, I'll have to pick that up.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, in case you missed the first and second printings. We also have the second printing of Nightwing number 70 hitting this week, and obviously both of those tie into the Punchline and the Joker War storylines.
Yep.
We also have Ludocrats number 1 from Image Comics and Year Zero number 1 from AWA Comics.
And that's it?
There's others, but those are the big ones.
Those are the big ones.
Yep.
Cool. Cool. So if you can get to a store, get to a store. Check out all the great new comics.
Yes, sir.
And like we said last week in the podcast, just go in and say hi.
Yes, please.
John and all the other store owners are probably pretty lonely with no new comic books in the store.
We are.
All right. We will be back. Maybe we'll have read something new. I don't know. We'll be back on Thursday.
Probably will have read Year Zero and Ludocrats number 1, if I had to guess.
All right.
Because I've read the second and third printings of those books already, so.
And I don't know if I'm going to be able to get anything this week.
Oh, you may not be able to.
We don't know. We're getting the report. We find out, well, today, as you hear this, we find out today whether we're going to be open and when.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, fingers crossed for you guys. I hope that you get to at least start doing curbside.
Yeah. My opinion is, all right, obviously this is coming out on Monday, so it doesn't even make sense to talk about it, but obviously I'm recording this ahead of time, so I think the reason they're waiting till Monday is they're stalling to open. I think we will be opening at some point next week, because I think if he was going to delay, they would have just said, like, obviously this week, they'd say, we need another 2 weeks.
Right. Well, like,
you know,
in our
mean?
Case, like, we got the word on Monday that we could open on Friday. So
right.
That's probably, hopefully that's what you'll get, is some kind of similar announcement.
I think he's holding true to the, we're going to wait till the 18th and see what happens. And he's going to wait till the 18th. And it's like, well, why can't you tell us we're open on the 18th? I think he's waiting till then to say we are going to start opening.
Right.
Gradually, you know, curbside stuff and everything like that.
Right.
So,
like I said, I hope so. Fingers crossed.
As people are listening to this, they're like, yes, we know.
Right, we heard this already. Yeah, we heard this earlier today. But.
Right, so, oh well. Alrighty, let's get out of here. And we'll be back on Thursday. Have a great week, everybody. Stay safe.
Take care, everyone.
Hey, Fred. Thanks for listening to the Bright Side Chat. We have a few sponsors who we'd like to mention. Arkham Comics and Games of Pearland, Texas. You can find them at arkhamcomicsandgames.com, one word. A. Pennyworth's Comics and Collectibles in Matthews, North Carolina. You can find them at apennyworthscomics.com. Apothesis Comics and Lounge in St. Louis, Missouri. You can find them at apothesiscomicsstl.com. Friendly Neighborhood Comics of Bellingham, Mass. You can find them at friendlycomics.com. Legends Comics and Games of Littleton, Mass. You can find them at legendscomics.com, comics with an X. And also Rubber Chicken Comics of Bellingham, Mass. And you can find them at rubberchickencomics.com.
So what's cool is all of our sponsors have agreed to give our listeners a 10% discount on any comics we talk about in our podcast. So if you hear it in our podcast, just go into any of the stores that we've mentioned and tell them you listened to the Bright Side Chat and you heard about this comic there, and they will give you a 10% discount on any of those books. Hopefully you guys can take advantage of that, and thank you to all of our sponsors.
This has been a Hey Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.